You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Interstate Batteries has been a proud supporter of the Sportsman's Nation since day one. So if you're looking for any type of battery, from rangefinders to trail cameras to your truck, car batteries, anything, any type of battery that you can think of, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail location and talk with a battery specialist. For more information about the company and all of the batteries that these guys offer, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Welcome back to the Backcountry Rookies Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Riker, and the Backcountry Rookies is designed to prepare, inspire, and educate hunters to head west for a backcountry big game hunt. Join us in our journey as we prepare and educate ourselves, as well as others, to be prepared for the hunt and to never stop learning. The Backcountry Rookies Podcast is proudly brought to you by Elk 101's University of Elk Hunting. It's the most comprehensive elk hunting education platform that you can find anywhere. From learning and knowing how to call elk to packing an elk out of the woods, University of Elk Hunting covers every step of the elk hunting process. Use the promo code ROOKIES and save $20 on your membership today. Now let's get to the show. Did I say big game somewhere in that intro? I think I might have said big game. Not today. We're not talking about big game today. Today we're talking about predator hunting. And I got a couple of guys coming on that is what their passion is hunting predators, hunting coyotes, hunting bobcats, getting out there and chasing after the predators. So I think it's a lot of fun. I love hunting coyotes. I love just getting out and doing some calling and calling them in and busting coyotes. It's certainly a lot of fun. I get the opportunity to do it out in West Texas quite a bit. And I thought it'd be cool to bring these guys on. They're good at it, man. These guys are experts, and that's why I brought them on. I could probably talk all day about hunting coyotes, but I can't do it to near the level that Chase and Corey talk about it. So here we go. Let's jump in. We're going to talk about predator hunting, and I think you'll probably learn some stuff from this. I know I did. I learned a lot by listening to it. So let's jump into it. Here we go. Talking predator hunting. All right, welcome back to the show. Today is a lot of fun. I'm stepping outside of the normal topics that we talk about with big game, but I'm talking about a topic that I think is a lot of fun, and I think a lot of people should, if they're not introduced to it, they should be introduced to it at some point in time. Maybe this podcast is the one that'll introduce you to it. We're talking about coyote hunting, predator hunting, and I've got a couple of pretty darn good hunters on here that are going to talk about it. So I've got Chase McNutt and Corey Sisco. Both these guys are from Texas, the great state, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So let's jump into it, man. We'll get into coyotes here in a minute. We'll get into calling and all of that good stuff. I want the listeners to know who you guys are. So, Chase, go ahead and quick intro yourself and tell us a little bit of your background, and then we'll jump over to Corey.
All right. My name is Chase McNutt. I'm born and raised in Lubbock, Texas. I've got a wife and two kids, and I got into predator hunting I guess I've been out of high school for 15 years, and we started hunting coyotes right after high school and got tired of getting kicked off of deer leases, and landowners were always happy with us killing varmints, so we kind of accidentally started a varmint hunting business on the side, and that's what we've been doing for quite a few years now.
Cool. Very cool. Do you still hunt deer? You said you got kicked off of deer leases. Do you still hunt deer?
Man, we've got access to hunt deer. We do really just to fill freezers, but other than that, we don't pursue them like we do coyotes.
Yeah. Okay, good. That's what it's about there. Just having, I bet you're not starving right now during this coronavirus thing, huh?
No, sir. Not at all.
Right on. All right, Corey, a little bit about your background.
Yeah, Corey Sisco, born and raised McKinney, Texas. Moved out to Lubbock in 2005 and have been in West Texas ever since. Really got it. I grew up duck hunting, bird hunting, just based on what I had access to. And then moving to West Texas was really when I started predator hunting around 2009 and been addicted ever since. It's just one of those things, a lot like deer hunting. There's a lot of sitting and waiting, but cow hunting, it's pretty fast-paced action that you can pick up and move, and just keeps the hunting game a little more exciting. And it's cheaper, and it's easier to get access to, so it's easy to fall in love with.
I agree, man. Every time I go, I like it a little bit more. There's something else that I pick up about it that I enjoy more and more. So it's, I think it's one of them things that's really good. This time of year is perfect, right? Those, the predators are running wild. They're, you know, they're out there doing their thing because they're starting to see, their food is increasing right now. And I think, well, we'll let you guys talk about it. So let's talk. The first thing we were going to talk about was seasons and the different seasons for hunting. What are the seasons, and why do you hunt when you do?
Man, we've kind of broken that down by kind of quarters of the year, but this time of year is prime time. Like you said, coyotes are moving. Calves are dropping right now. Well, we're a little past calving, but they're out and moving, chasing cows around, looking for little calves they can swoop up. And so this time of year, we're running a lot of territorial sounds, and you've got January, February, March. It's kind of breeding season, doing a lot more vocals during that time of year. And then July, August, September, you've got decoy season, which we don't do any decoying, but for those of you out there that do any decoying, that's the time of year to do it. And then April, May, and June is denning season. So again, still using a lot of vocals and mating calls and distress too, but just depends on what time of year you're in is what calls you'll throw at them.
Yeah, and we're going to touch on calls here in a little bit too, because that was one of the big topics. We did an Instagram questions on this, and I know calls came up several times. So we're definitely going to talk about that. Why is it, I guess, why is it that this calving season is the best? Is it obviously because there's calves on the ground, but do they like to move in that cold weather and that colder temperature?
They do. I mean, this time of year with freezing temperatures and, you know, the food sources have kind of dried up elsewhere. And so they heavily rely on rabbits and fawns and calves and all sorts of stuff. So it's just their prime hunting season is this time of year.
Yeah, it's colder out there. They got to move more often. I mean, it's kind of like deer. They're liable to move a lot more just doing due to the cold temperatures versus moving a whole bunch in the heat of the day in the summertime. So your best opportunity is when it's cold out there.
So they're just trying to stay warm, much like we do too, right? We move around when we get cold. What about having longer nights? Does that have any impact? Does that play any?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they'll move daytime, nighttime. It really just depends on where they're at as far as if they're hungry or not. A lot of times we see them move just as much during the day as we do at night. So it's kind of hit or miss on a lot of that plays in barometric pressures and stuff. And there's a lot of variables to it as to if they'll move during the day or night.
That's one of the things that the internet's crawling with. Well, this is the truth and that's the truth. You know, barometric pressure has to be this for them to move or not. They're better at night or they're better in the daytime. Man, we've experienced all the truths and none of the truths at the same time. So,
yeah.
Some of it's just, man, that's coyotes, and sometimes you get lucky, sometimes you don't. But that's what we try to do is figure it out every time we go and just hope we're on top of them at the right time.
Well, what's the – so if it's on the internet, it has to be true, right? And that's what they always say, but – it sounds like there's multiple things on there that relate to that barometric pressure. What is the truth or the untruth on that? What do people say? What's the pressure supposed to be at to get them to move and all that?
Man, so that depends on who you talk to and really different parts of the country. But some guys will have a set number of the barometric pressure that they'll go hunt when it's at that number or falling or at that number and rising. And some of the big guys – in the varmint world, I've talked to quite a few of them, and half of them will hunt only when it's falling, and the other half is when it's rising. And like Corey said, man, we've tried both, and we've seen them move on both, but I think we here recently settled on falling is when they move the most, just in our experience.
Huh, and that's interesting. Very interesting.
But yeah, some people, we've had a guy that has dogs in his backyard, and he'll look out the back window, and if his dogs are pacing in their pen, he'll get up and hunt or go out that night. And if he looks out the window and his dogs are laying down, he won't even waste his time.
I'll be darned.
Swears by it.
Yeah.
And that's really cool. Go ahead.
I was just saying, he's a big guy in the industry. He's done this for, man, 30 plus years, and they do a lot of coyote killing. So,
is he here in Texas?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
He was on the Fox Pro staff, and now he's on the Cabela staff. But he's a big hunter.
That's actually really, really cool. That's just neat that guy's done it that long, and his dogs know, and just everything knows.
Yeah. So. Just stuff you don't think of, but yeah. Some of these guys have some tricks, and they do a lot more killing than we do, so we listen to them.
Huh. Interesting.
And with thermals and suppressors coming into the game, and I mean thermals have just gotten better and better and better and cheaper, so people have more access to them, so a lot more night hunting has really started to make its peak here, and people are just starting to kind of trend towards night hunting's where it's at, and Chase and I both like both.
So thermal, you brought up a good thing with thermals, because I know a lot of states they're not even legal, but they are down here. Do you guys run them?
We have a couple buddies that have them. We personally don't. Actually, Corey does have a thermal. I take that back. I don't have a thermal, but we run them every chance we get.
Better step your game up.
I know, man. I'm the cheapskate of the group.
Yeah. Well, Corey's got one. You know what they say. If your buddy's got one, then you got one too, right? So you're good.
Yeah. I'll have one shortly.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the setup, and because this is another really big thing. I mean, we know the seasons, and maybe seasons actually play into the setup, and you can talk about that. The setup being – well, define that for me. Tell me what a setup is.
Yeah, so really when we're driving around looking for a stand or going to a stand that we know has been successful before, I probably won't list them all, and I'm not going to list them in order, but there's a few things that we look for when we look across the field or the terrain, and we say, well, that looks like a good spot. And vantage point, do we have any vantage point, or are we on a really flat piece of property? I would like to be at vantage point so I can see downhill if I can. Second, play the wind as hard as you can. And then check the wind more often than you actually think. We've had wind switch on us in mid-stand and get blown out. So just making sure you're paying attention to the wind, what it's doing before you go to stand, while you're on stand. You can do that. We do dead down wind detectors. It's basically like baby powder in a bottle. Mm-hmm. We run that and then just watch the grass and trees as you're calling and stuff like that. Coyotes are usually going to try to approach you downwind. So their best asset is their nose. So they're going to try to snip you out before they come into to your setup. So try to make sure you're set up to where your scent is not blowing downwind. Chase and I try to use crossing or diagonal winds most of the time if we can. Sun at your back if you can, depending on how you have access to the property. Sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. Try to sit in the shadows if you can't put the sun at your back. And then try to pay attention to your backdrop. Try to not to silhouette yourself on a hilltop or just out in the middle of the field. Try to make sure you have something behind your back. And then another thing, just remember coyotes are seeing you or your setup, your position from their height. So sometimes you say, well, I'm not low enough here, or we haven't walked far enough away from the truck, but we forget, you know, coyotes are 3 feet off the ground. They're not standing as tall as we are. So sometimes we can forget that and overcomplicate a stand sometimes.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. I've never thought about that. That's good. 3 feet, that's a big coyote.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was using a bigger
knife. We got big coyotes in Texas,
Chad. Everything's bigger down here. We're good.
That's right.
Do you guys sit together when you set up?
Yeah, we usually sit, man, I'd say anywhere from 10 feet away from each other to maybe 10 yards. We're always in distance where we can either squeak at each other if we see something or get each other's attention pretty quickly. There's nothing worse than losing a dog on a stand because your buddy can't get a hold of him or he can't see him.
He's got the shotgun. I got the rifle.
Do you guys do, is it like one caller, one shooter, or is it, well, you just said it, I guess. He's got a rifle, you got a shotgun, so you're both ready to go all the time.
Yeah, we do it both ways. You know, if we're on a piece of terrain that has no tight quarters, then we'll usually both bring rifles. When we hand call, usually it's one guy's calling, or that's his main priority is calling, and the other guy's the shooter, but the caller will always have a rifle just in case.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And then how long do you guys sit on a stand before you get up and move?
So that can change, but our kind of set time is 15 minutes on a stand, but a lot of that depends on how much land you have to hunt. When we first started out, we didn't have a lot of land, so we would sit our goofy butts there for 30 minutes to an hour sometimes just praying for something to move.
Yeah.
And now that we have access to more land, we found ourselves moving around a lot more. And so 15 minutes is about our max, unless we're trying to hunt a cat during the day. And that's when we'll sit a little bit longer if we know we're in a cat hole.
Okay.
And sometimes on smaller properties, coyotes, predators can be a little more weary just because there is maybe more traffic around that property. So sometimes it takes them longer to commit to your location. They're just trying to scope everything out, make sure it's really what they're after.
Yeah. I'll add to that, Chad, is even if 15 minutes hits and you're ready to get up, we found ourselves, if we stand up from a stand to kind of stand up slow and look around, because what he was saying earlier, there may be something sitting out there watching you. And a lot of times there is. They're just not ready to commit. And we've caught ourselves standing up early and we spook something or we end up chasing something out, that if we would have been a little more patient or got up slower and kind of watched and looked around, we could have maybe got it.
Got you. Yeah, that's a good tip. This podcast is brought to you by Go Hunt Insider, the fastest, most accurate way to plan for a hunt. Go Hunt Insider gives you draw odds, statistics, in-depth unit analysis, interactive maps, historical weather patterns, and much more to help you plan for that upcoming hunt. Use the code ROOKIES when you purchase Go Hunt Insider and get $50 in store credit to use in the Go Hunt gear shop. How about distance between stands? Obviously, I think this is going to be terrain dependent too, but when you do move, you've called for 15 minutes and you decide to get up and you move, how far are you driving? How far are you walking? Where are you going?
So sometimes it depends. If it's a really windy day and your call's getting knocked down, you can cut the distance on travel pretty significantly. But we try to think about, if we haven't pulled the trigger on a stand yet, do we think the area that we drove to now, was in calling distance or had a chance to make it to us by now? If we pull the trigger, Chase and I run suppressors at this point, so luckily we don't have to travel as far as we used to, but I would say it's a couple hundred yards at a time. Chase?
Yeah, I'd say okay. At least a couple hundred yards at the minimum.
Okay, that's not bad. I figured you were going to say further than that. That's good.
Well, man, there's a lot of variables too.
Yeah, that, I know there is. Terrain, hills, how much hills you're dealing with, and vegetation plays a part and all that. So,
and that's it. And sometimes, I mean, you'll shoot without a suppressor, so you're loud, and you'll move 100 yards, and a coyote will be coming in or standing there. So sometimes it just depends on the day and the coyotes.
Yeah. Cool. Very cool. So setups are really dependent, I guess. That vantage point is key. If you were to pick out two or three things that are like essential where you're not going to even think about sitting down unless you have it, what are those couple, let's say three things?
Really, vantage point, I can wind make or break that sometimes, but wind is everything for Chase and I at this point. This year we started playing the wind harder than we had been, and really just focusing a lot more downwind. Than sometimes you sit on a stand and what you're looking at is kind of in the middle of your wind or upwind, and you just know the coyotes are right there. But you just got to follow coyote instinct and always keep your eyes downwind.
Do you guys use any of that spray-on stuff that is supposed to cover your scent, or have you found that it's not really effective with coyotes?
Man, from what we've seen, if you play the wind right, stuff like that shouldn't be an issue.
Okay, yep.
We have used it before, yes, but we're not religious to it. But if you're playing, what he's saying is, if you're calling upwind or in a crosswind, ideally, whatever's coming in, you're going to shoot it before it gets dead downwind. So that's the whole idea. And that's so the scent blocker stuff, man, I think some of it works, but
it's kind of fell to we'll use it when we remember to use it. And
yeah.
Yeah.
If the wind's not in our favor for the whole day and we know it's swirling or something like that and we have it in the truck, we'll try to throw it on. But it's not one of those essentials for us at this point.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. I'm kind of the same way. Most people will tell you that too. When we go out into the backcountry for 2 or 3 days and you've been sweating for 2 or 3 days and you really smell pretty ripe, that stuff isn't going to cover it up, man. You got to play the wind, and that's key. So
right.
Coyotes, they're the same way.
Yep.
So if you don't mind, I mean, we kind of got an agenda we're following here, but we talked so much about calling during the setup. Let's go ahead and jump into calls, and then we'll come back and start touching on some of that gear and caliber stuff. Does that work for you guys?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get into calls then. And when you would, I think this is going to, we'll try to kind of summarize this a little bit, because I think we could probably talk for an hour on calls alone. Hit up like different seasons and what seasons you would use what calls and what time of day you would use calls and just kind of when you would use specific types.
Okay. So
did I ask that right? Did that make any sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
So January, February, March is when we're going to run a lot of vocals. So howling, barking, just coyote vocals, anything that sounds like a coyote. Mating calls, and then we prey and distress calls are year round, really. April, May, and June is binning season, so it's still vocals and mating sounds, and then like I said, prey and distress sounds work year round there too. Then you go to July, August, and September is decoy. That's a big territory time, so vocals are 100%. They're wanting to kick you out of their area. So there's a lot of vocal chatter and just howling and barking and a lot of back and forth.
Are those the same? Sorry to jump in, but I'm curious. Are those the same howls that you would use back in February when you're doing or are you howling differently? No. Is it more aggressive?
Yeah, it's a different. Yep, it's more aggressive during decoy season. That's more of a challenge howl and challenge barks. There's definitely more aggressive stuff. And then in breeding season, you're doing lonely male, lonely female, just a lot of sorrel howls and just a lot of different kind of neutral sounds. But and that's just mainly saying, hey, I'm a coyote and I'm out here. But then back in July in decoy and territory time, that's when it's kind of I'm ready to fight and you're not supposed to be in this area. So you can piss them off real quick and get them coming in real quick with any kind of sounds like that.
What about prey sounds and squeakers and things like that? Are those good all year, or is there a time of year when they're not going to be good?
Yeah, during those seasons, we'll start with the vocals and stuff, We try to start every stand with a howl, just to let another coyote know, hey, there's someone else out there. And then we throw a prey sound with it. But that usually gets them riled up enough to bring something in. And really the only time that works against you howling on the first of a stand is when you're after a cat. Usually a cat and a dog, if you start howling right out of the gate, you're more than likely going to run a cat off. I'm not saying every time, but if you're after a cat, you don't want to start with a howl on the stand.
What do you start with?
Just prey, just distress sounds, rabbits, birds. Man, I think one thing that people get hung up on is what sound works, what distress sound, and, you know, is it a raccoon in distress? Well, there's not any coons around here.
Or, yeah, right.
You know, the jaybird, well, I've never seen a jaybird here. Man, from what we can tell, coyotes don't know that. And until somebody can interview a coyote and ask them about that, we're kind of sticking to, it's a weird sound. It sounds like something's dying, and they don't care what it is.
Yeah, okay. So you don't, like out here, I'm sorry, go ahead, Corey.
Another question, you know, is can I change or throw multiple sounds on the same stat with within a 15-minute time period? And, you know, is that just going to spook them off or scare them away, confuse them? And, man, if you're trying something it's not working, just switch it up. And I mean, they might be hung up out there a couple of hundred yards away, and then they'll come in on a dead sprint when they hear that right sound. So,
yeah. Howlers, I think we know what those are, and you kind of touched on it. I was going to ask, what are those sounds of prey? Crow, you said birds and stuff. I know there's a crow, wounded crow sound that it seems to always work when I'm hunting out there in West Texas. And then the wounded rabbit usually works out pretty good too.
Yep. Cottontail and jackrabbit are your two biggest sounds that you're going to run. Woodpecker, really any bird sounds for cats, but we have cats come into jackrabbit and cottontail just as much. So, there's some fawn distress sounds, really anything. I mean, if you think about how many sounds a fox crow comes on or comes with when you buy it, I mean, there's just a crap load of them, and there's so many of them that'll work. You just got to try them.
Yeah. Really quick. And then we're going to jump in. You mentioned the fox crow, and we're going to talk about types of calls, but is the stand for a cat different than a stand for a dog, for a coyote? Or do they run kind of in the same areas and you're looking around for the same stuff?
Yeah, that's going to be terrain. Real thick stuff is where you'll normally find a cat and try to pull it out of it. But we've had them, we've set up a lot of stands thinking we're going to call a dog in and we have a cat, or vice versa. So I'd say the thicker the better for cats, but they're everywhere.
Okay. So it kind of depends on how you start calling when you sit down, right?
Yeah, and that's where we, again, we don't, if we're after a cat, we're not going to howl and just run straight into distress.
Okay.
Howl towards the end of the set.
Yeah, if you're running distress the whole time and you don't get anything, then you can start throwing in some howls and stuff to just try and pull something in.
Yeah. So cats are a little bit more elusive than coyotes, cats being like bobcats and stuff like that. Not mountain lion. I'm not really talking about those, but are you hunting ground that's like somebody told you there's a bobcat out there, or are you going out and saying, maybe let's just call for a bobcat instead of coyotes?
So previous to the land that we have access to now, I would have told you that it would have been one of my life goals was to shoot a bobcat.
Mm-hmm.
But we found some of the right land and just the right terrain. And on any given day or night, you can go out and shoot a handful of cats if you try hard enough.
Are you serious? Man, I've never shot one, and I've always wanted one. I'm coming out to Lubbock. I'll be out there next week. No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine has a place next door to one of the places we hunt. He shot 9 cats off that place in one night.
Holy smokes, man.
Yeah, so they come in waves, but they're definitely out there, at least in this area.
Do you guys ever, real quick, do you ever hunt the Big Cat Challenge?
Man, we have we try to stay away from those. I guess me and you were talking earlier, but with having kids, we both got young kids, so it kind of hinders our 24-hour extravaganzas of drinking cold beer with our buddies and hunting yeah. varmints. But
yeah, right, right. So for those for people that don't know, the Big Cat Challenge, they run it out of Midland, Texas. It's probably in other states too, but what do you have 24 yeah. hours, kill four coyotes and a bobcat, right?
Yep.
And then you got to get all of four or all five of them to Midland, Odessa, Texas. Is that right? Is it Midland?
Yeah. Well, there's other tournaments around, but Big Cat's out of Big Spring. And there's a handful of them throughout the year, but usually it's five coyotes to kind of buy in. And then that biggest cat or the heaviest cat wins. And, man, there's I think this year it was like $53,000 for first place.
Yeah, I knew it was a bunch. Dang. It's like a team of four guys or something. So yep. we were going to do it. My brother-in-law asked me to come out there to West Texas and hunt with him, and timing was just terrible. And I couldn't get out there for it, but I wanted to. I think it sounds like fun. And you're right. It is kind of a beer drinking extravaganza because he's like, nope, my wife will be the driver and we're just going to go hunt dogs and cats all night. So.
Yeah. If you know where a 34 pound cat is, you're in the money. I mean, that's seems to be 34 point something has won it the past couple of years.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a pretty big cat.
It is. For anybody that hadn't hunted in a competition like that, you need to at least do it one time.
Yeah. I think it sounds like a blast.
Man, it is. It's a lot of fun.
All right. So sorry about my tangent there. We ran down a foxhole. How about that?
Right.
Let's talk about the types of calls, because you mentioned a Fox Pro earlier, and I think a lot of people are going to those electronic style calls nowadays. I might be wrong, but talk about the different kinds of calls and then what you guys use most.
So I've been running a Fox Pro CS24C, and that's kind of one of their compact units. It's pretty lightweight and kind of easy to throw in and out of a bag, but I've had that one for at least 10 years, I think, and I haven't had any problems with it. I think Fox Pro makes a good product. They're a little pricey. Kind of decided if you're going to do this for as long as we plan on doing it, to spend a little money on a call and get a good one. So we run that, and I'd say the other one that we'd run is a Icotec. That'd be our next in line. We've got one, but we usually run the Fox Pro. But you just mainly want something with a big speaker that you can get the sound out there on windy days, and that's your biggest hurdle is the wind. Mm-hmm. The sounds that we run on that Fox Pro, we have some of Fox Pro's sounds that they have with the call, and then I'd say 90% of the calls we run are from a guy named Tony Tebby. You download him off of his website, and he makes his own sounds. He has coyotes at his house, and he records vocals and traps rabbits and records those. So they're pretty legit sounds. So we run that, I'd say, a majority of the time. And then for hand calls, closed read calls, really any of your Primos, any stuff you see at the stores, they all do about the same. What I found, I probably bought every hand call that was ever made, and I used three of them.
So what do you use then? Let's talk about that. Maybe this will keep some people from spending hundreds of bucks on calls if you just tell them what you use.
We've got Ed Siri makes a couple of good calls.
Is the variable predator calls.
Yeah, I think it's the Variable Predator 6, and that's an Ed Siri. And then Primos has a couple, closed read, catnip, and I'm trying to think what else. As far as open read, Tony Tebby, same guy, has a couple of, he has one called Green Nasty that has a wide tone board, and it's easy to call or easy to blow, and it got a lot of variation to it. You can do howls with it. You can do distress with it. I think there's quite a few different things you can do with one call, so it's a pretty versatile call. And then for diaphragm calls, we run MFK. Fox Pro has some diaphragms that are good, but I'd say MFK is probably one of the ones, Tory Cook stuff. We've been running those for a few years and like those.
Mm-hmm.
You got any more?
No, that's really about it.
Okay.
I'd say for people wanting to look for calls, and I'm probably the worst at this. I said it earlier that I've purchased just about every one of them out there, but just get a couple of them and get good at them.
Yeah.
You can do a lot more hunting and a lot more killing if you will just stick to a couple, two or three different ones, and just get comfortable with them, learn how to use them, learn what they can do, because a lot of these calls do a lot more than people can make them do. So I'd say don't get hung up in buying everything and the latest and greatest sounds and calls that are out, and just get good at what you got. Yeah. You'll do a lot more.
When it comes to cow hand calls, I mean, it's a lot like duck calls. There's $20 ones and there's $100 ones, and they almost get the same job done if you just stick with one and get good at it.
Yeah, that's a very valuable point, I think. What about, I see these days a lot of e-callers have like a little tail whip and things that come with it. Do you guys use that?
So we're laughing because we have for years. I've actually, on the side of my Fox Pro call, I've zip tied a little Mojo decoy that just spins around. And for years, I've had it work a couple times, so I can't say it doesn't work. But it just gets the attention off of you and gives them something to look at while they're coming in. But here lately, I'd say in the past couple of years, we've found it to be more trouble than it's worth. Messing with it, man. If we get them in close enough and they get to that call, they see it and see that it's fake, and they turn around and split. So it's busted us more than it's helped us.
Yeah, we've had cows almost pick it up or put it in their mouth before, but it's just one of those things. If you can spot coyotes before they spot you and just be cautious about when you move or when you talk and stuff like that, the odds have been better for us to not use it.
Got it. And then with that e-call, how far do you prefer to keep it away from you?
Man, depending on the remote range, but really the better you get it out there, the further you get it out there, the better.
Okay.
We usually 25 yards is we kind of go back and forth on this. We don't want to walk 50 yards out there and blow a stand. So we have been known to put it in a little closer, but I'd say 25 yards is a pretty safe distance to not get busted and still get the job done.
Okay. All right. Last question on calls. When you, like, if you go out 25 yards and you set that e-caller out there, you go back up, you set your stand, how long before you start hammering on your call and letting it rip?
Man, just however long it takes you to get set up, get your gloves on and get your face mask on. And
okay. So you're not waiting like 10 minutes to let things cool down and sort of let them forget that you're there. You're just getting after it.
Yeah. We usually, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, something like that, and we're usually into it.
Okay. Good. And I said that was the last question, but it wasn't. I lied. How long do you, so let's say you're running a wounded rabbit. Do you let that wounded rabbit, how long do you let that call play before you take a break?
So if we're on a 15 minute stand, we'll probably do 4 or 5 minutes and kill it for a sec. And if we like that sound, try it again, or that'd be the time to switch sounds. So I'd say 5 minutes.
Okay.
You know, that's one of the questions that we've gotten is, do I just run sound the whole time, or should I call for 2 minutes and let off for a couple minutes? And we've done it both ways. We've had a lot of success just running the call the whole time.
Yeah.
I'm always thinking like, man, because you would think if it was a wounded rabbit and it's out there having a hell of a time and it's squalling and screaming and doing everything, it's not going to last 15 or 20 minutes to let it go the whole. That's always my thought process. Like a real rabbit, it's going to get tired eventually. So
if you're hand calling, you're going to naturally take breaks just so you can catch your breath.
Yeah. Good point. So, okay, good. So about 5 minutes or so, take a little break and then get back after it, maybe switch up sounds. So, okay. Yeah. All right. So calls are done. Let's jump into gear lists and the gear that you guys think is important.
I'd say camo for us. I run King's camo. It seems to match our terrain pretty well around here.
Yeah, I've worn King's camo. I like the Under Armour Ridge Reaper camo. I mean, this is West Texas, so it's a lot of lighter, grassy colors. Mm-hmm. Tend to work for us.
We always run a face mask. That seems to be, that's kind of just something we've always done. And that's just one of those neck gaiters that we just pull over our face while we call. And usually try and wear gloves. Just really cover any of your skin as best you can, especially with sun. It reflects a lot if your skin's exposed. So if we can't sit in the shadows, then we try to camo up as much as we can. We both run a bino bag, kind of a guide, little backpack, little front pouch.
Alaska guide chest packs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got those. We'll run our binoculars in and a rangefinder. That's where we keep our hang calls and diaphragms. It's kind of a little fanny pack for coyote hunters.
We have a coyote drag. So if you shoot one off way up out away from the truck, you can easily drag it back. That's a from just us survival gear. That's Sterling Justice. He's a Lubbock local.
We run paracord.
Yeah.
We run light Primos tripods that we can get on and off really quick. I've also run the Really Right Stuff tripod. Just so I can have a fixed platform. It's really steady. But
so are you shooting off that tripod, or is that for your binos?
We're shooting off of them.
Okay.
We run the one with a quick trigger, so you can adjust pretty quickly. 99% of the time, that's where we're shooting off of. Mm-hmm.
And we're sitting on a little chair most of the time. A lot, I guess, back to terrain. If we're sitting on a rock face or on something, we have a vantage point. We won't use a little seat. We'll use our tripod there. But if we're on kind of flatter stuff, we'll sit in a little chair that kind of gets us about a foot off the ground just to get enough sight line above the grass or mesquite or whatever we're in front of. But
that's really about it. Coyote hunting gear is pretty simple. If you got a rifle, shotgun, or anything to kill the animal, and you got, you're blended with your background, you're pretty good.
Pretty good to go. I'm curious with the binos, how much glassing are you guys doing? And when are you doing glassing? Because I've never really glassed. Once I sit in there, I'm afraid that's too much movement. And I usually just try to look with my eyes as much as I can. Are you guys pulling your binos up and scanning the terrain and stuff?
So one thing Corey's pretty good about doing, when we set up on a stand, he'll get his binos out. They have a rangefinder in them. And we'll shoot a couple points. We'll shoot our 100, 200, 300, just to kind of know if something comes out. We have a rough idea of how far it is. But the only time we pull the binos out to glass and look for stuff is if we've been on a stand for a long time and we kind of start looking into the mesquite or into the thicket just to see if something's held up, or if we're on a stand that's wide open and we can see for a really long ways, because we've had times where you're running the call for 15 minutes and there's a coyote still 1,000 yards out there more hoofing it your direction, but we would have never seen it if we didn't have binos. So, but I'd say 99% of the time we're sitting on kind of close quarter stands and we don't use them to find things. We're just ranging with them and kind of using them here and there.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of what I was, I assumed that you did with them, but I wasn't sure if you were actually glassing like the whole time you're scanning.
Right.
All right. Let's talk about calibers. This was another big question and people always want to know about calibers and fur friendly calibers and that kind of stuff. What do you guys use typically? And then we'll go from there. Let's start out by talking what you guys use and why you use it.
So I think Chase and I both started off running probably 223 to 243 or 22-250. Those have been hot calibers for a long time. They're fast and flat calibers. So, I mean, that's a big part of what you're after in a coyote game. You're not one to dial dope a whole lot to shoot coyotes unless you're just trying to take some long range kills. But 223, 224 Valkyrie is a new caliber, relatively new. That's a great caliber. 22 250, as I mentioned. 22 Creedmoor is a relatively newer caliber, starting to make its appearance. I personally shoot the 243 Win right now with a 55 grain bullet. Six millimeter Creedmoor is probably what I would shoot if I had one. 6.5 Creedmoor is all over the place. It's an awesome caliber as far as BCs go and just ballistics overall. But if I'm going to think about fur friendly, I could pick 223, 224, 22 250, 22 Creedmoor, and 243 Win, or the 6mm Creedmoor, and all those. As long as you're not going ballistic tip or something like that, and you're thinking about soft point, could probably be fur friendly.
How about rimfire? 17 HMR, WSM, you guys ever shoot any of that stuff?
Not personally, but I mean, so you can get it done. I think at some point it just becomes about shot placement and do you want to track or anything, or you just want it to fall in its tracks.
Well, that's why I got that 300 Win Mag.
That's right. If you don't care about fur at all, or recoil, or sound, then you just take your big calibers out there, right?
Right. No, I know that 224 Valkyrie is a heck of a good caliber. I had one in an AR for a while, and I ended up selling it to my brother-in-law, and now he shoots it. He's always shooting that thing.
That's what I've been running for the past year is the 224 little 60 grain B-Max.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a good one.
Yeah, it's a good little caliber. I'm curious, your 243, what kind of speed are you getting with those 50? Did you say 55 grain or 60 grain?
Yes, sir. So I cut my barrel down to 16 and run suppressor. I'm pushing pretty close to 3,000
okay. feet. Oh, that's probably really nice. Yeah. Okay. I think that's probably – oh, shotguns. How about shotguns? What shotguns you guys running? What load?
You can run
what load do you shoot?
Any shotgun you want. And then Chase is usually shooting.
It's a double lot 15 pellet. I've shot some turkey loads, and but this 15 pellet is kind of my go-to. It seems to have a big enough spread and enough knockdown.
12 gauge, I guess.
Yes, 12 gauge.
Okay, and then are they 3-inch or 2 3/4 3-inch shells? Okay.
3-inch.
Cool. Very cool. Yeah.
And like Corey said, any shotgun will work. Pump, automatic, doesn't matter.
What kind of range are you, like with a shotgun, what's too far?
I would say 60's pushing it.
Okay.
We try not to. We had to take a couple that far, but man, honestly, we're usually shooting them anywhere from 10 feet away to 50 yards is probably, that's it for us.
Yeah, that's good. You guys are way more patient than me. I see them coming in. I get them at like 100 yards. And I'm like, oh, shit, there's a coyote. I'm going to shoot it.
Yeah.
I get all excited. This podcast is brought to you by OnX Hunt. Use OnX Hunt to share crucial map information like waypoints, routes, campsites, and much more with your hunting partners. Use the tracker to stay on track in the field and know where you stand. Save 20% on your premium or elite membership when you use the promo code ROOKIES today. As we start to kind of wind this thing down, let's talk about where you hunt and how you acquire the land, because Texas is a little different animal than those western states. Texas is all private, and I'm curious how you guys acquire the land that you do.
So really we use Onyx, which I think is a pretty well known. I think you guys deal with them a lot, but
mm-hmm. Yep.
I use Onyx, and anywhere I go in my little life, if I'm traveling out of town, I'm looking up to see who owns what, we've kind of gotten to where we look for big patches of land. Like you said, it's privately owned, so we have a lot of big landowners. There's a lot of small farms, but we try to go find the 5,000 acres and bigger individual ranches. So I usually find out who they are on Onyx and look up the tax address, put that into Google Maps, and look at the 3D viewer. If it's a big landowner, they'll have an office building somewhere. Their tax address will be somewhere pretty public. So I'll either look at the 3D deal on the Google Maps and figure out the name of the office building, or kind of get some, just snoop around and find some info. Google that phone number, call the receptionist or the lady at the front desk, and just start asking kind of probing questions. And sometimes you'll get a lady that'll spill her guts and tell you everything you want to know, or you'll get people that are kind of uptight and don't want to give you information. And at that point, I'll offer to, that I want to purchase the land, or I want to make a, just some kind of a deal to, so I need to talk to the owner. And I've had quite a few people call me back for that, but it's really just kind of creeping on people, to be honest with you.
Don't let him fool you. Chase can't go anywhere without somehow ended up landing talking about coyote hunting, and he'll come back and tell me, well, I got another 10,000 acres, you know, out of some business meeting he's supposed to go to. So
I usually turn everything into hunting somehow, but man, you just have to be intentional about it. And everywhere you go, you're meeting people. And I mean, those people know other people that own land or have friends that have access to places. And I think you just sell yourself and figure out how to get people to like you is the biggest thing.
Yeah.
They'll trust you, and then next thing you know, you're hunting on their ranch.
Right. And I would only assume that trying to get access for predator hunting is a lot easier than it is for, say, a mule deer or whitetail or whichever. People are usually a little bit more receptive when you tell them, hey, we want to go take care of your predator problem, not shoot your 10-point buck that you got running around out there, you know?
Yeah, so everything around here is leased up for deer hunting, and these guys are getting big money.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, like I said earlier, how we got into this was tired of paying that money and getting kicked off. Just, you know, oil field companies coming in and taking over your lease and paying double what you can. So absolutely, calling the landowner and telling them, hey, man, we'd love to come.
Deer.
Yeah, we'd love to come kill your problems that you're having. And it just goes over a lot easier, but you do run into a lot of landowners that have had bad experiences with varmint hunters. Varmint hunters are kind of like bull riders in the rest of the world. Nobody likes them, but they get a bad rap.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people do stupid stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny. That's a good comparison there. All right, let's wrap it up on general tips and tricks, and just kind of what you guys, each one of you, give a couple of tips as we roll out, and then we'll do contact info and we'll wrap it up.
Sure. I think one of the biggest things we kind of have landed on is through the years not being afraid to drive through an area. And you know, we used to drive through something and said, man, I wish we would have called that, but it's too late. We just drove through it. And we're out here hunting a lot of oil leases and just coming to the realization that these coyotes and predators see trucks drive that same road every single day. So we back out now and call right where we drove through, and it's turned out to be successful quite a bit. Be willing to walk further to the stand, so further away from the truck, or, you know, over the next hill to a good stand. Like we said, stay on stand for at least 15 minutes. A couple months ago, we had coyotes not show up from 7 a.m. and then at 3 p.m. they turned on hot and heavy and it was game on. So most of the time we would have given up that day, but luckily we had a free day out, so we stayed at it and it paid off.
Nice. Very nice. Chase, what about you? You got any tips?
Man, I think the biggest thing for me, and I said it a little bit earlier, is not getting hung up on having all the gear and spending a whole bunch of money on this. Corey said it earlier, you can get into this sport or whatever you want to call it for pretty cheap. And I think a lot of people don't feel like they have the right e-collar, or don't have the right hand calls, or the right rifles, or the right glass. And you can get hung up on all that stuff, or you can get out there and you can hunt. And I think that's been the biggest thing for me, is not worrying about the latest and greatest stuff out there, the latest calibers. Just get your ass out there and blow a call, sit still, and shoot.
Yeah. Yep. Very good. I got a tip for you, too. Maybe you guys will tell me I'm crazy, but whenever you get to that land that you're going to hunt, start looking. I've shot more coyotes literally from the truck on the ranches that I get to play on in West Texas. Because you'll see them, man. They just – because like you said, they're not scared of those trucks, because they're constantly in and out of there, man. Those ranchers run those ranch roads constantly, and we're always seeing stuff. About 2 months ago, I was out there, and my brother-in-law shot a coyote from the truck, and I shot a javelina that all I had to do was get out of the truck and walk about 20 yards and shot the javelina right there. So,
heck yeah.
Yeah, they'll start moving as soon as you put your rifle in the truck in the back seat where it's hard to get to.
Then they just sit in the middle of the road right in front of you. So, but that's one thing that I've always learned. As soon as we get off the main highway and we hit the dirt roads on those ranch roads, we just start scanning and start looking. And occasionally you'll see them trotting off 30 or 40 yards away, you know, just nonchalant, because they're used to doing it and they're not used to running away from bullets and stuff. So,
Right on, guys. One other thing just to throw out there, like on a stand, we run into this a lot, but if you have a shot with me and him hunting, if you have a shot and you're ready to pull the trigger, pull the damn trigger and don't wait.
Yeah. Chase likes to play this little trick of, hey, wait. And then he pulls the trigger after he asked me to wait.
That happened one time.
Kind of dog hogging, I guess.
Yeah. Before I let you guys go, I got to try to figure out. So Ryan tells me that every time he goes hunting with you, he's never killed a coyote. So he told me to question whether or not you guys are worth a shit at this game or not.
Oh, man. I had a feeling he was going to say something about that.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he said, I can only chalk that up to, I bet you there's some beer involved in that game.
Oh, yeah. It was pouring down rain. We Tokyo drifted in the mud all the way to the back of the ranch drinking cold beer. And, of course, we weren't going to see shit, but
we'll just call.
We had a good time.
There
you
go.
That's right. Ryan's lying.
Yeah, okay. We'll go with that. We'll go with that. Well, that's good. Guys, I appreciate you coming on. What's y'all's Instagram and Facebook and all that good stuff?
Yeah, making sure I give it to you correctly. Instagram is CCisco3.
What was it again? CCisco what?
CCisco3.
Okay.
And then Facebook is just Corey Cisco. CISCO.
Okay. And Chase?
Mine is Chase, CHASE. B as in boy, and McNutt, McNutt.
Okay. And you're same on Facebook, right? Or it's just Chase McNutt on
Facebook? It's Chase McNutt on Facebook.
Okay. Cool.
Chase B McNutt on both.
Okay. I'll put it in the show notes. If anybody's got coyote hunting questions or wants to reach out to you or anything like that, they may reach out and ask. I don't know. But I appreciate you guys coming on, man, and sharing the info that you got. And I think that was a lot of fun, because to me, coyote hunting is a blast, and I hope more people get out there and do it and have a good time with it. So thanks, guys.
Absolutely, man. Appreciate you having us.
You bet. All right. Thanks to Chase and Corey for coming on. That was a lot of fun. I like I said in the very beginning of the intro, I did learn a lot from these guys. There's some calling stuff that I certainly had no idea about. That using the prey calls to bring in bobcats was new to me. So I'm going to give that a shot here real soon. And that's all I got. So thanks to those guys for coming on. Thank you to everybody that listens to the show. Don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. We always appreciate the feedback, especially the good feedback. And thanks to Dan Johnson, Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, for having us on here. That's it. I'm out of here. Have a great week.